to A Podcast Greater Than Yourself, Season 5. Thank you for listening. Do you have a question about sobriety, the 12 steps, sponsorship, or just want to contact someone from the podcast? Email us at podcastgreaterthanyourself@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at Dr_Silkworth or A Podcast Greater Than Yourself. If you're enjoying the podcast, please give us a rating on your podcast app and share the show with anyone who may benefit.
Okay. Welcome. Welcome back to A Podcast Greater Than Yourself. My name is John Bartleby Bartle. What is it?
Barleycorn.
Barleycorn. Barleycorn? That can't be right. We'll go with that, though. And with me today, my co-host, Mrs. Jones.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Yeah, I feel like... Do you want to take a beat and catch up?
No, I'm just really excited because we have an actual cat in the studio today.
Yeah, it is very cool for you. I'm allergic, but I'll cope. I'll just take 1 to 15 Benadryl because I'm an alcoholic. Hank Parkhurst's cat. Hi.
Hello. Hi.
How's it going?
How's everyone doing today?
Doing well. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Welcome.
Good. Glad to be here.
Very glad to have you back. You were on our season finale episode, and that was cool. Were you on at all other than that last season?
Not last season. I was on the workshop.
The workshop.
I asked a question.
Yes.
Yeah.
You said. Never mind.
Yeah. I said,
there you go.
Oh my God.
I'll let you make the horrible cat joke. Yeah, dude. It's been a lifelong dream to have you on my podcast. The podcast we've had for 3 years. Very cool though. Yeah. We're gonna talk page 69 and the sex ideal. Yeah. And I was like, what? Who's the horniest of all meme pages?
Yeah. I thought you were thinking like the sexiest guy, you know, the pudgy dad.
Yes. The dad bod ideal. Yeah. You do have like sort of the dad bod when people say dad bod.
100%.
Meanwhile, most like the aggregate dad bod experience is like 40 pounds heavier than you. But when people say dad bod, they're like, yeah, I kind of like the dad bod. And it's like someone who's like slightly not thin. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know that I even call anyone overweight. It's just like, you're just barely not thin. Like, oh, he's got such a dad body. I'm like, okay. So you're either Jason Momoa, you're just jacked and ripped, or you're fucking dad bod.
Right. That wasn't me, by the way.
I was pausing to make sure. Do we have a squirt bottle in the studio?
We do. John Barleycorn, where are you hearing people who keep saying, I like that dad bod? Like, where are you hearing that? or am I just not in touch with what the kids say nowadays?
I thought it was in one of the Facebook groups that you moderate, but...
God bless you for doing that.
You're squirt bottling me. Yeah. I don't know. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm misremembering that.
Because those people need moderating for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
there's a lot of moderation needed. Yeah. So, wow, which cat is this going off?
This is the same one it always is. It's okay. Her
Mecky?
It's Mecky.
Mecky. Yes. Fake name. Okay, yeah. Perfect.
And she is She's out of squirt bottle range.
I don't speak that dialect, so I can't. Yeah.
You can't translate?
People think there's just one cat language, but there's many. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're complex creatures for sure.
All right, without any further ado, let's jump right into this stuff. So we're not going to go through everything in the book that centers around sex instinct. What I really want to focus on today is the sex ideal, what that looks like, how the book suggests we come up with it, seek to achieve it and maintain it, and if we fall short, what happens, and what to do if that's a really troublesome area. And also, spoilers, maybe some information on this not just having to do with sex. So, starting on page 69. okay. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed.
Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice.
Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we are going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half-truth. It depends on us and on our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and will have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge, when to yield would mean heartache.
Nice. So, Hank, have you ever had sex? Are you familiar with this?
Like a couple, two, three times, maybe. Yeah. No, like...
I was like, as you were finishing, I'm like, what's the rudest thing I could say right now?
I don't know where these three kids came from. I don't know. Like, just appeared out of nowhere.
Procreation.
Yeah.
I got them like I got sobriety by osmosis.
Hey, yo.
By sitting on a chair.
Sitting on my hands.
In an AA meeting. Oh, my God.
All right. I'm sorry.
Oh, God. I'm so glad you didn't... choose Hampshire Grenadier for this for this one. You would not make it through this this hour.
Oh yeah, we have just the most mature members here.
So I guess I will kick it off.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's hear it. Cool.
So yeah, this oh my God, the cats. So this is something I'm actually like, I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say about it, because this is something that I was not brought to when I was first guided through the steps. Mm. And it's something I didn't spend a lot of time on until after I had started sponsoring people. Once I had started sponsoring people and I was looking for direction in the book, I was able to see how important, you know, this part was. And it has changed for me, right? Like, because I went back after I had done what I thought was a thorough fourth and fifth step, after a year, and realized I hadn't really written a sane and sound ideal for my sex life, mm-hmm. for my relationships. So I went back and looked at this, these couple pages really, really hard, and wrote an ideal out, that I still use and still reference. But I will say, ever since I've been in the practice of 10 and 11 daily, that ideal has shifted and changed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I continue to, grow towards it, but also, like, I don't want to say outgrow it, because it's important in its, like, where it is, but I am, it's grown for me. Like, it's a different thing now. But I still reference it, and I still have it written down. I've made edits here and there. But the, like, I'm trying to think of, like, specific, points to this. And also just like you said, how it talks about harms and how it pertains to harm, writing out our harms list, our inventory. Mm-hmm. I don't read this with sponsees, and maybe I should, and that's sort of why I'm glad I'm on this podcast right now, because I want to talk to two people who I look up to as sponsors. You know, I read this before I give directions in four, but I don't typically read it with sponsees. And I'm interested to hear y'all's take on, like, how important this could be to, like, maybe go through with a sponsee. So that's where I'll stop for now.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I sort of led with the spoiler on my kind of broad take, I guess, on this, but, in part of what Mrs. Jones read, in other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. I think it's really important to cover this with people going through the steps because of that particular piece. Because it tells me exactly how, like, a 1,000-foot view, how I'm going to deal with any problem that I have as a recovered person. And the long and short of it is steps 10, 11, and 12. That's, like, really what it's saying, you know?
Right.
Basically, what I'm going to do is I'm going to look and see if I'm making mistakes, right? I'm going to look and see if I'm creating harm, if I'm being selfish, is really what it's saying. And if I am, I'm going to look in an ideal that would... I'm trying this season to not say ostensibly five times an episode. Thank you, Hampshire Grenadier. I'm trying to establish an ideal that feels like the way of harmony rather than chaos, right? So
right.
If I feel guided to have an ideal in place, and then I take that into prayer meditation, this is where I enter into 11. I'm looking for guidance on how to live up to that, right? And then further into the reading, it goes into, if this is really hard and this is really a struggle for you, guess what?
There's a 12 step.
Yeah. Go help other people, right? Focus on their problem. Yeah. So of equal import is each of those three elements. It's like,
right.
If you're not doing inventory, how are you going to be clear on what the ideal you're trying to establish is even, like, treating, unquotes, or, like, what stands between you, what parts of self are blocking you, right? If you're not clear on that, then the other two are kind of moot. If you're not clear on the ideal, then the inventory and the 12 is moot, right? You know, if you're right. not clearly going out to turn your thoughts to other people, then the other two are moot. It's just, it's this symbiotic thing. And so I don't go throw myself the harder into working with others or helping others or whatever it says. I don't do that. Like, in a means to like negate the other two or ignoring the other two. I'm doing those right. after having gotten some clarity in inventory and having asked for guidance from God, and then like acknowledging that I'm not the power. I'm not the one that makes the ideal happen. I'm not the one that even sets the ideal, right? I do some inventory, I seek, I ask, and then I go be useful to someone else where I know I can like help, right? And when I'm doing that, then the other stuff comes and the guidance gets clearer. And what is it? Some of this language. The imperious urge is quietened or whatever. You know? But I mean, that's how it works. It's the symbiotic yeah. nature of inventory, prayer, meditation, and helping others. And I think it's really yes. important to cover it with people because, and the way that I always cover it with people is when we're reading it with the four step directions, I will, you know, when we get to this part in the four step, I will say, in other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. So I say, okay, so they're telling us exactly how we're going to handle any problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it, right?
Right.
Do that. If it's really troublesome, do even more for other people. Don't try to figure it out. It's not like, you know what I mean? It's not like over inventory it, right?
It's like one of the 50 different places in the book. It says to do the exact same thing in different words in different language.
Exactly.
Bingo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, dude.
And I think the other thing I want to say real quick, right off the top, the second paragraph, I think, because one of the things that you mentioned was that your first time through the steps, this was like largely, it was like left out. And like, right. I've had that experience with tons of people in sponsorship where we get here and they're like, oh, I've never done this. Or I didn't know that that was a thing or whatever. Right. Or they did like some other version of it. I think maybe it's, I don't know who's less fortunate, but there's like the kind of bastardized version where it's like, you're just doing like a spill your guts, tell all about your whole sex life or something.
Yeah.
Which I'm just like, dude, miss me with that shit. How rude to do that to someone. But
right.
This line, in this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. I always draw people's attention to that because it's literally telling us exactly how to do that. Because it can kind of, this is one of the parts in the book, I think, where the directions are clear, but it can be confusing as shit to try to be like, well, what does it mean? You know, because it's like, just like where it says, few of us have ever tried to do this, right?
Right.
You know, a thorough moral inventory, like few of us have ever tried to face this stuff, let alone document it in this way. So like, how do I come up with a sane and sound ideal? Okay, well, in this way. And what is the way? It's the paragraph above where it asks all the questions, right?
Right.
Right.
So it is so much detail, but I think it can be very kind of confusing, you know, for someone unguided or maybe guided by someone who doesn't really have experience with it.
Right. And it was just left out entirely for me until I was able to see, like I said just a second ago, where I'm seeing these themes repeated over and over and over and doing 10 and 11. I could look back on this page and go, wait a second. It's saying this again here, you know? So yeah, it's really cool. Also Bill W's like most hyper self-aware page ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hot tip.
Write what you know. You know, I find, you know, to your point, John Barleycorn, about how this can be confusing. There's that part where it says, you know, where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? And with the alcoholic who is still selfish and self-centered, that's an opportunity to beat ourselves up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I do direct sponsees, you know, to answer that question with the caveat that this is all about shaping our future, not beating ourselves up for the past.
Yeah.
So I'll even rephrase that as, what would I do instead if I were in that situation again? What would a God-directed sex life look like?
Right.
And with the question, whom had we hurt? Even though it says exactly whom had we hurt, there's a tendency to look at this more specifically about sex, like I'm just writing down a list of my former sex partners,
right,
or that I'm taking sex completely out of the equation. And I don't think either one is really accurate. Right. Like, I like keeping, like, this is about sex. You know, it's not necessarily about the act itself, but about, you know, where the sex urge is a factor. Mm. And, you know, I know this isn't specific to women, but it does come up with us, like, have you ever manipulated a man for free drinks, you know? And oh shit, you know? Right. And then they're like, oh, I do have names to write down, you know, like you didn't have sex with them, but you know, you sure did hurt them.
Yeah.
And that can be eye-opening, you know, ways in which that, you know, we are selfish and self-centered, dishonest, inconsiderate. Even if, you know, we felt like, you know, well, I didn't really have a problem there. Like, maybe you did though.
Right. Yeah. I like the thing that you're putting a finger on with the, what should we have done instead? I don't know who said this. It might've just been in a meeting. I'm not sure. I think it was a woman I heard speak in a meeting once. I don't know. But it stuck with me. Principles above personalities, I guess. I can use that cop out for not remembering who this was.
oh my God.
But the principle yes. stayed with me. Her personality? Yeah, yes. No, she's wallpaper. the general point that she was making was, now, when I hear people do things like this in the book, sometimes it's like, okay, and? But this was not one of those. Like, sometimes people say, like with the fear thing, it'll be like, we asked him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be, not what he would have us do. And then it's like, they say that, and then they never like follow it up and explain like what.
Right.
Okay, cool. I'm like, okay, 75th time I've heard that. I'm waiting for like the, what's the thing? What's going to be the thing? So, but with this thing, it was like, she said, what should we have done instead? It doesn't ask us what could we have done instead.
Exactly.
And that seemed very powerful to me because it's like, I couldn't have done anything different. Like, it's not about me condemning my actions, my behaviors. It's not about me trying to figure out how I can like change who I was or, you know, punishing myself for those circumstances. There's a piece of this that is sort of disassociative and to a point of like, let's look at it clinically. Let's look at it just like the rest of the inventory. What do I have in stock, right? And I think using specifically what should we have done instead is one of those language points in the four-step writing where it is, again, clarifying like, hey, firstly, did I make mistakes? But secondly, like, let's keep it to 19 words in that second column. Like, it's not like we're not doing this psychological deep dive or this life history thing. We're not kicking the shit out of ourselves. What we're saying is like, could I have done something different? Probably not. I was who I was at that moment, and that's how I acted, right? So that's where I was like, could I have stopped drinking? Apparently I couldn't. I didn't. I tried, right? Similar kind of thing. So it's like, what should I have done instead? Oftentimes, well, I should have viewed this other person as a human being autonomous to me with their own life experience who deserved their agency. You know what I mean? To be treated right. like another person rather than just someone to like emotionally, financially, whatever, you know, treat whatever I needed in the moment, which is the only way right. I thought of them. So I really think that that's a powerful thing to point out.
All right, John, I only have 1 minute. You have time for lightning 12 questions.
Let's do it.
All right, one. What season are we on?
5.
How many episodes are there this season?
37 episodes.
Fucking shit. Do you know how many episodes there have been prior to this season?
I want to say 70.
Would it surprise you to learn that there have been 84 episodes and 3 trailers prior to this season?
It would genuinely surprise me.
Does it take you a long time to plan, record, and edit the 84 episodes and 3 trailers that have been made prior to this season?
Yes, I've gotten a lot more timely with my editing, but it still takes quite a bit of time and energy. Yeah.
How long did it take you to make the 2 Uncle Randy and the Old Timer mixtape skits?
Those are cumulative, like one session each, so like 1 day each, and then maybe another half of a session for my wife to do some vocals.
You could tell me any amount of time, and I'd be like, that checks out. Who's the funniest co-host on the pod?
Hands down, Ted. No, it's Mrs. Jones. It's Mrs. Jones.
Oh, I thought I would beat you to it. Does the podcast make any money?
No.
Why not?
Hard stop, no. We've never put out an ad. We've never put anything behind a paywall. It's not what the show's about. We're here to entertain and hopefully be helpful.
So why do you make the podcast then, if you're not going to make a bunch of money?
Well, it's fun. It marries, you know, for me, my loves of entertainment, spirituality, humor, and, you know, shooting the shit with my buddies. And people, interestingly enough, find it helpful and enjoy it.
Okay. Is it worth it?
Fuck yeah.
Is there a way for listeners to support the podcast?
Yes, you can tell anyone who you think might like it to listen to it. You can send it to your friends. You can write a review on your podcast app. You can do a rating. And now you can also financially send in a few bucks if you care to via Cash App.
That's APGTY pod.
Yeah.
APGTYPOD.
That's right.
At Cash App?
Yeah. You do a little dollar sign and then you go APGTYPOD. And then you send whatever. Or you don't do that at all and the podcast will still remain free.
Quite the sales pitch there. But fuck yeah. I mean, that is good. It will remain free.
Yeah.
Tight. All right. Bonus question. Fuck, marry, kill. Clay, Agent X, or the guy from the Dopey podcast?
That's just rude.
I'm like, there's no way he's going to answer this.
Not today, Ted.
That's too much.
Good chat.
Good times.
Meow.
That was me. That actually was me.
and you know, and that's... another thing that I find is really powerful, and again, this might sound sexist, but including myself and many women that I get to work with were completely unaware that they had been treating men like objects. Mm-hmm. Because it's, you know, it's just framed differently. Like, no, I wasn't. Right. Yeah, you were, you know? Right. And when I bring up my own personal examples of that, and just like you said, John, like, you know, looking at this person as a whole human being with feelings, mm-hmm. and, you know, their own past and their own ideas and all of that, it can be really eye-opening to see how selfish and self-centered we can be.
Yeah.
And I'm careful to, like, tread carefully when someone has sexual trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Which a lot of us can have, you know, and that's not the same as like, oh, we just need an overhauling. Like, right. You know, like where I'm not a professional.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it can be confusing if a person is using this inventory to address what is really a resentment. And, right. You know, and like, and, and like putting a name in, you know, like who did I hurt, and then naming the person who abused them,
right?
And then getting stuck on the rest of the questions, and it's like, well, wait, but did you hurt them? Like, oh shit, I didn't. Okay, well then let's put that person in the resentment inventory, you know, and follow the process, you know, that way, totally. And kind of separating those two issues.
Yeah.
And the one of the lines in here that I just absolutely love and has been especially healing, I think, for a lot of people, is that, you know, our sex powers were God-given, therefore good, mm-hmm. neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. And and yeah, it's so good and so progressive that this was written by,
right.
you know, a straight white guy. And yet people today, regardless of what, you know, the kind of sex you want to have, like, it's wide open.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to touch on something Lacan, where, you know, specific to the amends process, where it says in the middle of the, oh my God.
she likes it. Okay. Yeah. Listeners, you can't see this, obviously, but I've been trying to squirt my cat with a squirt bottle, and it's making her meow more and even come closer. And she's like, she finds this refreshing, I think.
This is, wow. There's a very certain, there's a specific type of listener that is just thinking this is all like a theater of the mind, double entendre thing going on for this episode.
Oh yeah.
Which it is.
And his name is Hampshire Grenadier.
Hi, Hampy.
What's up, Hamps? Ham pie. So the part where it says we subjected each relation to this test, was it selfish or not? And then down the page where it says we must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in doing so. Mm-hmm. That those two things in conjunction kind of stuck out, because it's like, I've the majority of my like relationships after submitting them to this process, I realized were highly selfish. Mm-hmm. I was being very selfish. And so, then in going out and making amends to these people, you know, I've had to make serious considerations and be like really discerning, on to not disrupt like their life and their marriages and their families. Because yeah, I mean, if I would have just, and I know this is like kind of like not the topic we're talking about, but like if I were to just have gone out and started making amends to all these people, I would have caused a lot more harm than good. So I'm interested to hear what you guys think about that. But
yeah, no, it's a great point, Hank's cat. I love that it's brought up here, you know, like the seed is planted about making amends in the fourth step, mm-hmm. you know, and there was a time that when I first started sponsoring it, I was like, oh, don't look at that part. You're like, let's not worry about that. You know, like that's a mistake that's even written there. Okay. I mean, it does make the point, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing, you know, so we do have that, that warning there, but people can take this too far. And there's the idea that you never make amends to an ex,
right.
like that's impossible. Right. And right, that's simply crazy. Not true. Yeah. yeah like right. That's such a narrow view. I have made amends to exes. Didn't always go so well, but nice. I did.
What do you mean? They didn't go great every time?
No. Oh. But that was on me, and it wasn't harming other people. It was just awkward and weird because one time I ran away from somebody that I literally ran into them. I had no way of getting a hold of them. I didn't know if they were still alive. Ran into them and went eek and ran the other way. Like for real, like made eye contact and ran. And then 2 years later ran into them again and was like, shit, I have to do this now. And it was just in the middle of a CVS pharmacy, and it was super awkward and weird. But grateful that I did it. Yeah, I mean, we have to let God guide us in this stuff. You know, it's I mean, my husband, who isn't in a 12-step program, has made amends to ex-girlfriends just by sitting in on AA meetings and listening to some of this stuff. And like, oh, I think I have somebody I owe an amends to. I'm like, wow, you don't even need to burn your life to the ground to realize that you can do that. You know, you can just be inspired and do it. And it was beautiful.
Yeah. Unlocked a cheat. Cheat code.
Yeah.
Cheat code for spirituality.
I love the point that you just made about this being like God guided, because in terms of quote unquote results, for better or worse, this is really like where I feel, and I think we talked about this recently, where I feel in sponsorship with someone new, I really feel like most actively I begin making it clear how my hands are not on the wheel at all.
Exactly.
And I'm like, because it's literally like, I will read this with them and I'll go, cool, so go do that. Part of that being, you talk to whatever it is you believe or even willing to believe in, and ask for this ideal. Ask for it, you know, in reference to this paragraph that started the reading that we read. You know, ask for what the future ideal should be. Ask for the ability to live up to it. Whatever your prayer life looks like right now, just introduce that. That's it. I'm not going to give you any more direction, and I'm going to let you do whatever you're going to do. And later, when we talk about really launching into amends, we can revisit some of this stuff, and I can give you counsel as I am a person's, but I'm not gonna be the one to give you the direction on what you need to be doing, or even who you need to be talking to. I do, however, repeatedly often find myself clarifying with the, well, you know, I know you're never supposed to, you know what I mean? You're never supposed to do amends for, like yesterday in a meeting, I was in the first in-person meeting I've been to in a long time. And there's a new person I'm sponsoring here who's newly back into sponsorship. And we were going to this newcomer meeting where there's like over 100 people in this room. And this woman shared at the end, and it was a really long thing, and it was this, I mean, path of destruction, right? And it was like, well, yeah, I made the choice to steal from this drug dealer, and, you know, he ain't shit, but he knows people who are shit, you know? And it was just like, okay, you know, it was like a whole, and like her like 7-year-old is right next to her the whole time, like the whole thing. I was just like, I am so, like, this is harrowing. I am like so uncomfortable. And then it was like compounding levels of like different types of harrowing, because then she throws out, and I know that you are not allowed to make amends to drug dealers, so, you know, there's no way that you could pay a drug dealer back. That's not an option. And I'm just sitting there just like, it's actually like the easiest amends you could possibly do.
Yeah,
you know exactly what you stole or how much you stole or how much it was worth.
Just, and you're fucking just giving them money.
Yeah, just drop a fucking envelope under the doormat and bounce, dude. Like, I mean, I don't, you know, but like, if you really think you're going to get killed or something, but there's the finality and like cocksuredness with which that's presented as like just across the board. You don't make amends with exes, especially this horse shit about that she's going to end up with you having sex, or it's just like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? And so I think the reason why I'm kind of diving into that so much is it is the opposite of, let me make it clear, I am not in charge of this process at all. This is you and God, because it's the opposite of that, in the fact that it's like, or in the sense that it's like, here's what you can and cannot do. These are just blanket things. I'm not even going to listen to the specifics. You can't do this. You can't do that. You never do this. You never do that. Wide swaths of people you've probably done the most harm to in your life. I'm just going to tell you, you're not allowed to talk to about it.
Right.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. I actually, speaking of like moderating on Facebook, recently got into a debate about that. Someone was saying like, you know, the topic was amends, and then that topic about like not paying back a drug dealer. And I chimed in with whatever I said, you know, about like, that doesn't sound like a blanket rule to follow. Yeah. You know what, they're a human being, right? You owe them money, you just pay them back. And someone replied saying, well, you're not from the streets. And I was like, I know, and I'm like, that's fair.
Unreal. I love
the streets.
Yeah.
I guess I am.
Okay. You don't know me.
Yeah,
I love it.
Well, like the whole idea that you would like go and make amends and, you know, you would want to have sex with somebody is like, okay, that's even more of a reason to begin a 10 and 11 step practice during the amends process.
Right.
Right. It's like, that's why that should be happening, because right, you should be seeing these things about yourself. And
yeah, that sounds like sex is very troublesome.
Yeah.
If
there,
like, you know, you accidentally fuck somebody you're making amends to, like, yeah.
I mean, when I got sober, the extent to which my life was like dominated by my sex instinct was like directly in proportion to how it was dominated with drugs and alcohol. I mean, it was just like, I was, and I think, you know, there's kind of a thing that goes around where people are like, well, why are we looking at sex? Like, I get fears and I get resentments. That makes sense. And sometimes I kind of have a hard time putting it into words. Like, firstly, you're like, what, my fucking idea? I just do the stuff with the book, right? But, you know, I think the book really, it kind of explains it. Firstly, it says like this is an area where a lot of people who come into the fold have problems, right? But I think what we're doing in 68 through 71 is really illuminating like how loaded with selfishness and dishonesty and resentment and fear and self-seeking and self-pity and all that stuff, how loaded this area is just by nature of how personal an experience this is between you and other people. And like we've all talked about, there are many instances in my life in which someone was negatively impacted because I was driven by this instinct, but they are someone who I never had any type of sexual encounter with or interaction with or desire for. But my self-seeking with that made me neglect them or made me like ditch them or treat them poorly in some other way. And I think those people belong on this inventory.
Yes.
But to Mrs. Jones's point earlier, when I hear someone in a meeting say, this isn't a sex inventory, this is a relationships inventory, and it should be everyone you've ever been friends with or in your family, I'm like, look, I don't mind if you do that, but I don't know where the fuck you're getting that.
Yeah.
Right.
Where's that? Where the fuck is that?
Yeah, I hear that all the time. Like, well, it's not really about sex. And I use the sex ideal on my mother-in-law, or I use it on God. And I'm like, well, sure, but that's just, it's different than what the book says. You know, like, we can answer these questions in other areas of our life, but this does say now about sex.
Yeah.
Right.
Sex.
You can use it as a tool in other places, but it's pretty clear that it's about sex.
Right.
And if we ignore that it's about the sex instinct, as John Barleycorn was saying, then we're missing this whole area of our lives in which we've done harm. And I've worked with a lot of people who will be like, oh, I don't have to do that, or I won't have much to write. And I'm like, cool. You know, and then we read it, and then I'll share some of my experiences and like what this revealed in my personal life. And then they're like, oh, I thought of a few names, you know, and it's like, pray and hit pen to paper, see what comes out. And, you know, and then we get to, this stuff is illuminated.
Right. And
yeah,
We talk a lot about the first time through the steps is like training you to take other people through the steps. And I think in the same spirit, doing these thorough directions for step four, the way that they're presented in this chapter is training you to have a healthy 10 step, right? And to, because when we get to step 10, it says, hey, you already learned how to do this. You're just going to keep doing that inventory the same way. And you're going to do amends the same way. Same shit, right? Keep doing that shit. So like the beauty in that is we're being trained to do the growth steps later, right? But we're also being trained again to handle any problem. So like later, once I've done a thorough four step with the sex instinct inventory, I can then, and I'm invited to do this by the book, I can then go back and take any problem through that same process. And I think this is what we're getting at. It's like, instead of having this huge expansive thing as the last inventory of my four step, why don't I just do what the book says? And then later, when I have troublesome things, maybe other types of relationships, whatever it is, I can take those to this. I can tell you that me and most of the people who I have sponsored who have recovered and stayed recovered have done a bunch of inventory on their career or finances or like food and exercise. And through that repeated inventory eventually came to a point where they're like, I have to do an ideal on this. And then they did an ideal. And then they they live in a daily growth and maintenance of that ideal. And they look at it the same fucking way. And it's the same thing for me. When I get up every single morning, one of the things that I ask is for the ability to eat and to treat my body in a way that honors God and the gifts that God's given me. Because that was a big problem for me a couple years into recovery. And as you guys know, I'm in a much better place with that now. And it's literally just the result of trying everything I could do and failing on self-will repeatedly and not doing the three-legged stool approach that's laid out here for sex, which is equal 10, 11, and 12. What I was doing is like, let me do a shitload of inventory, or let me sponsor the fuck out of everyone, or let me just like really sit in meditation. But it's like really what had to happen was a complete surrender to like not being able to figure this out and just a balance of those three things and establishing an ideal and looking at like allowing myself to be disciplined in that ideal. And it's the same thing, but it's like, if I were to take all that shit to a four step with a new person, like I'm just confusing you.
And
I'm giving you information that is going to be helpful to you someday. Perhaps maybe you'll never need it. But right now, all you really need is this, because it's a blueprint on how to do this going forward.
Beautiful.
God damn. I wish somebody would have told me that when I was doing my fourth step.
But you would have been confused.
Just that last bit, I mean, you know?
Yeah. Okay,
12 questions with our guest, Hank Parkhurst's cat.
All right.
Okay, question one. What's your favorite fictional depiction of a 12-step meeting and why?
Oh my God.
What?
Oh my God.
So many great ones come to mind. It's hard to choose, I know.
Oh. I know there are so many cringy ones.
Throwing up.
Yeah. There are so many cringy ones, but now that you're asking me, I cannot recall like an actual film or show. Can the answer be all equally bad? I don't like any of them. They're all terrible.
I don't know that I do either.
I don't think I've ever seen one that was like in any way accurate.
I think whenever I ask people questions like that, like which ones do you think are good, one of two things happens. They say something that I've never heard of,
Right.
Or never watched, at least. Or they say something that I find really unrepresentative of the program and really cringe. And so either way, I'm either like, ah, okay. Or I'm like, ooh, okay.
That's what you like.
Okay, great. Good, good.
Yeah,
hey, I'll be good talk.
Call one.
Right. Well, all right.
Shit.
Okay, fair enough.
Next question. Okay. What's the first line you ever highlighted in the Big Book?
Oh, shit. Well, since when I opened the book the first time, I skipped all past all the Roman numerals. I can't remember, but I can look right now because I have it in front of me. And I went straight to Bill's story. So the first thing I highlighted was bottom of page 5. When he talks about, I guess I can read it really fast. It's kind of small. I woke up, this had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business. And so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk.
Boom. Powerful. Yeah. That
because
is correct.
I was like, that is exactly what is happening right now in my life. Exactly.
Were you still drinking when you read that?
No, but I was very newly sober. Mm-hmm. And I did drink again though after that. Because I didn't do shit. I just went to meetings and cook spaghetti dinners and stuff.
Shortly afterward, you came home drunk.
Service work keeps you sober.
I just went to tons of meetings. I went for coffee with my sponsor and did no actual.
I've said it before, but when I finally picked the book back up again after like 16, 17 years, I read Bill's story and I was like just so overcome by like how the stuff like that was describing me so well.
Yeah.
Like none of the, I even lament my own hesitation in saying that I identify with Bill because it's like, I do. But when I say that, I'm not like, oh yeah, 1930s rich straight white guy or what, it's none of the stuff that people like shit on, about like the identity stuff or whatever.
That's the alcoholic stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's the fucking important shit. It's the thing that the fucking chapter's about. Yeah.
Yeah.
All
you
of that stuff.
You didn't fancy yourself a leader?
Right. Yeah, right. Well, all of that stuff, like, it was just like, it really hit home, and I was like, this really is describing the experience I'm having. And it was really funny because I asked my wife to read it. And, like, then that night when we were going to bed, I was like, yeah, did you read that chapter? And she was like, yeah, that guy Bill's real fucked up, huh?
Nothing like you at all.
Yeah, and I was just like, how do I say, wow, I really felt like it was describing me. Like, I'm like, okay, cool. All right, so, question 2 from me. Would you say you spend more time with step 11 in the morning or in the evening?
Evening. Yeah, evening. I have a whole like time set aside where when kids are in bed and I do the directions and then follow that up with some other stuff I do. But the morning is more of a like is just a little bit quicker. More of like a 5 to 10 minute thing.
When you say other stuff, were we talking like pickleball?
Right. No, like playing with a ball of yarn, chasing like rodents, that kind of stuff.
Laser light.
Yeah, I sit back in the lotus position, light a stick of catnip.
Right.
Nice. All right. Next question. How do you define crosstalk?
God, I love this.
I define it as someone who, well, I guess it's crosstalk, not the person crosstalking, but the person crosstalking only cares about hearing their own voice and is not actually listening to what anyone is saying. And just really likes the sound of their own voice. So it's an annoying sound. Crosstalk is an annoying, grating sound that makes me have to do 10 steps.
Love it. And whose fault is that?
I guess mine.
All right. Okay, fuck, marry, kill. The 12 and 12, living sober, daily reflections.
Shit. This question sucks.
You need to sample that sound that this cat just made.
This question is going to make me break my sane sound ideal for my future sex life.
Yeah. All right. So living sober, 12 and 12 and daily reflection. That's what I'm hearing, right?
Yeah.
I guess I'll fuck 12 and 12 because she seems kind of weird. Like, she's out there, you know?
Definitely the most adventurous. Yeah.
Yeah, adventurous. She's out there. I'm going to kill living sober because what a pointless fucking book it is. And I guess I'm going to marry the daily reflection because she seems calm and, you know, kind of quiet and boring, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, I guess that.
Yeah, that's my favorite one so far. I like it.
Yeah. Cool. I like how everyone paints themselves into a corner, you know? Oh, no.
Who am I stuck with for life?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
I'll do a daily reflection for life. That's fine. Okay. I'm not reading a 12 and 12 for life.
Okay. Cool. When's the last time you collected a chip?
Oh, God.
Like in front of people.
In front of people.
And said God, thank you and cried.
Honestly. It's kind of embarrassing. It was my second year sober. And God, I guess I wasn't. Anyway, so yeah, it was my second year.
So 6 months from now?
Yeah. It was my second year sober, and I remember getting
what
it.
What a dumb joke.
That was really dumb.
You dummy. But I remember getting it and feeling like as soon as I got it, I remember being up there and being like, I shouldn't have done this. Why am I here? Why am I standing here? This is stupid. Yeah. It was my second year. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So for this, we're going to throw any critical thinking skills out the window. We're just going to assume all the rumors are true, whatever rumors you may have heard, whatever. No, we're cartoon rules apply here, okay?
Okay.
Would you have given Bill the whiskey on his deathbed?
God damn. That's such a hard question to answer. I think I would have if I knew he was dying. Like, if I knew he was going to die. I think I might have, because he was suffering like emphysema.
Yeah, he was just like a pile of wheezing oatmeal at the end.
Yeah, yeah, he was just like in like suffering. So I was just like, yeah, I think I would. I think as like a charitable act, I think I would.
Okay.
Good Samaritan every day.
That fits the bill.
It does. And he wrote it. Yeah. Okay. What misquote is your biggest pet peeve? There's a better way to phrase that. Sorry. Biggest pet peeve misquote.
Oh my God, I'm going to sound like such a douche.
Do it.
Douche it up.
She's like, that's the trap.
It's a douchey question, to be fair. Yeah. So yeah. I'll take responsibility.
The first thing that comes to mind is upon awakening.
I love it. Yeah.
It's so douchey and so
it
like,
matters so much.
It matters so much, but I have a meme about it, and that's like the first thing that comes to my mind. And the meme is about the person correcting someone and being douchey. So it's a meme about me.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is picture yourself. You're new to AA, trying to get sober, showing up to your first meeting, right?
Right.
Would you rather be loved until you can love yourself, or taken out back of the clubhouse and shot in the face?
Bullets to the head.
Bullets to the head. Okay, wait. No. The non-joke second half is, or be bossed around and bullied by someone who you asked for help.
Well, I can speak from experience of like without the like being funny. Like I can speak from experience that I was the first that happened to me. You know, for the first 3 months I was in AA, I was surrounded by old, sweet, well-meaning people trying to love me until I could love myself, and I'm just very lucky that I found the solution in the book before I died, because but I don't know. I think maybe I would have left sooner had someone like tried to like grab me by the scruff of the neck, because I'm a cat, and you know, like yeah, bossed me around. I probably would have left. So yeah, I guess I'd have to pick love me until I can love myself.
All right. That is awesome. Incorrect, but okay.
No, shut no. up.
I'm surprised when anyone picks either.
Yeah, I didn't want to, but I had
it's,
to.
It's a terrible question.
Yeah. All these questions are terrible.
Yeah, they're evil.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Real good.
Okay, next one. If you could change a line in the book, what would it be?
Oh, I was thinking about this the other day. What's the one where it's ambiguous about being an alcoholic? It's like you may be, you might be.
44.
I like that, because if it said you definitely were, then it's you're not able to self-diagnose, I guess. I don't know if I have an answer for that.
You think maybe you would just change the, what is it? The or on 44? I think that's what people usually say.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Or. That's the one. I know that's kind of a stock answer, but that's the one that I wish was not there. Or.
Yeah.
And yeah, like the ability to like look into the book and self-diagnose using the information from the book, you know, is like it's a little scattershot in the book. I wish sometimes that it was a little bit more like together.
Mm-hmm.
Just for purposes of taking like shaky newcomers through. But I use, you know, all the heavy hitter passages about alcoholism and how to diagnose, you know, when I'm taking somebody through step one. But yeah.
Somebody probably sent you like a laminated bookmark with all the places to go on it, right?
No, Mr. Barleycorn. I just listened to this podcast.
Oh, you just took notes from our show. Oh, okay, perfect. No, there's only two ways to have known how to do that. I'm joking.
I know.
Okay.
That's what we do here.
My final question. Do you have a home group? What's your home group?
And does it know it's your home group?
Does your home group have a home group?
Although I haven't been in many, many moon, Black Rhinos International Big Book Study.
Yes.
Sponsored by Arby's is my
home group. I love it. I love it. That's great. What a great answer. I love it. The horror on people's face when they go, "Where's your home group?" And then I'm like, "Yeah, I don't, huh?"
Well, it's even better when it's even better when you show up to a detox and they ask you, like, you know, and I'm like not with anybody else because I don't know any recovered people locally, so right. I'm just like by myself toting a big book, and they're like, "Oh, who are you with?" I'm like, "I'm with me. I'm with
Alcoholics Anonymous.
Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm here to bring a meeting."
AA sent me. Okay, my last question. Is there anything that you have suggested to a sponsee in the past that you no longer suggest? Like, how have you fucked up?
Oh, God, like, so many things. I said it in the chat.
14. Narrow it down to 14.
Yeah, I need to narrow it down. Yeah. Like, yeah. We need, like, another hour if I really was telling. But, no, like it came up in our group chat earlier this week, I think, when I was talking about suggesting spiritual literature outside of AA before any formal inventory has been written or amends have been made. Mm. Suggesting anything outside of the directions in the big book, that's my number one thing I wish I would not have done.
Yeah.
Because I think I confused a few people for sure. And yeah. So that's it. Yeah. Boring answer, but that's the realness.
No.
That's the realness.
Yeah. Bonus question. How would you define the term big book thumper?
Isn't that like Big Larry, the big book thumper? He like plays the big book. There's YouTube videos.
Yeah, he just went viral. Okay. Made some derogatory comment about food stamps or something.
Right. plays with the spoons, woman. No, I
just thumping a book. If you're 300 pounds, I'm just like.
Big book thumper. I used to like feel a sense of pride when someone would call me that.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely have been called that. And it was, you know, in the evangelical days of sobriety, newly recovered through the steps and trying to save Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't like subscribe to that term anymore. I would say, like, you know, the big book is a tool to God, and that's what I use it as. But if I was to, like, big book thumper is someone who knows the book but may not always be applying the principles outlined in the book.
Good answer.
All right, bonus question for our listeners. Is there any, like, I don't know, like, country rap artist that you physically resemble so they can have a mental image? No.
What's just that guy's kidding. Fucking name?
I don't remember. I just thought about it when you leaned over
Hardy.
A certain way.
It's Hardy.
Hardy? I have no idea who this Hardy. Is. It just...
Who do you look like?
Hank sent me some picture of this guy, and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, it unfortunately, that guy looks... Well, he looks like me. I don't look like him.
Yeah, I think you were around first.
Yeah,
somebody, like, came up to you in public, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. They, like, came up behind me and tapped me on the shoulder, and then... I mean, I don't know. Well, yeah, I think they came up to me, and they're like, oh, never mind.
I'm literally Googling country rap artists.
I don't even know if that's what the guy does. I'm
No, I'm just like,
I'm just here to derail things. That's, I'm a chaos agent.
You don't look like Jelly Roll.
Not yet.
Not yet. I'm getting there.
I'm working on it.
Oh, God.
Amazing. Well, dude.
Why did I Google this?
This is great.
Okay, stop.
Yeah, this is so great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming on, man. What a cool chat. And loved everything you had to... My brain lost the last word there. Loved everything that you had.
Fuck yeah.
To say. Thanks, Hank's
to
cat.
Say. There you go. Thank you.
Yeah, go and see me on Instagram. I got to plug it.
Hell yes. I was going to say, like, halfway through, I was like, oh shit, I didn't say that at the beginning. I've been getting like really lackadaisical about the intros on this shit. I don't know. Wheels are off. We're just like flying by the seat of our pants and any other number of analogies.
You can patch it in later, right?
Yes. Do it right now. Do the plug now, and I'll put it at the top of the show. Oh, wait. I should do it. Okay. Please welcome our guest of Instagram recovery meme fame, Hank Parkhurst's cat. That's the name of the account. And now, on with the interview. You know I'm leaving that at the end.
It's really, really
so
important.
So smooth. Yes.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
This has been a podcast greater than yourself.
A podcast greater than yourself was created by recovered alcoholics. All involved in the creation of this podcast are active members of Alcoholics Anonymous who wish to carry the message of our own recovery to those who still suffer. We do not claim to represent Alcoholics Anonymous. All comments are from our own experiences as alcoholics who have recovered by following the directions for the 12 steps found in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for listening.